Today's podcast is sponsored by RX Bar. For 25% off your first order, visit rxbar.com/baldmove and enter promo code baldmove at checkout.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another Bald Move Television, the podcast where we, to the best of my knowledge, consider all of television.
Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything we haven't considered yet, except for what we're about to talk about today.
I'll say it's the officially podcast for all of television.
Yes. Television called. They said, you guys are it.
They did. We said, now, wait a second. Do you mean like cable? Do you mean terrestrial broadcast? And they're like, no, television has called.
I couldn't refuse the call.
Television was played by Gillian Anderson, and she called, and she was dressed up as David Bowie, and she said, "We got the official nod." So that's what we're doing today. The small segment of television we're going to be covering today, as part of our larger all television mandate, is the 2017 late release of Black Mirror. Just squeaked under the wire.
The 29th, I think.
Yeah,
they put that out, which makes it ineligible for baldies.
I suppose.
Yeah, because we just didn't have time to watch it, and now we're getting around to it.
But I do love watching Black Mirror ever since I've discovered it, and mm-hmm. I do love talking about Black Mirror because it's a show that begs you to say, what do I think about this show? It's essentially a caution. It's just an endlessly cautionary tale about the effects of technology on culture.
Uh-huh.
And we had a rollicking commission podcast about the first season, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe one of these days we'll get around to season two and three.
But I still haven't seen season three yet.
I've seen a lot of it.
I skipped it.
I've seen a lot of it because when we watched the first season, like, I'm like, holy shit, if I'd known this show was like this,
yeah,
you know, I would have been watching it the whole time, and I consumed a lot of it.
Technological Twilight Zone, essentially.
Essentially, yeah. 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 So now I will say to open up what did you think of this season as a whole of Black Mirror? Or is that even a useful thing to say about six completely unrelated
right.
shows that happen to be about the social implications of technology on culture?
No, I mean, certainly, like, if I were somebody who were looking to either renew or cancel Black Mirror, I would be thinking about that because you kind of have to. So I don't think it's entirely, you know, pointless to talk about what you thought as a whole. Overall, I enjoyed the season.
Okay.
I think there were a lot more hits than misses for me in this season.
Yeah.
But perhaps not as much as, like, season two I really enjoyed. And as well season one, but I haven't seen season three.
I think that's different about this season of Black Mirror is there's one or two episodes, probably two episodes, that I thought completely fell flat on their face.
Okay.
That had kind of laughable technology and the implications on society in a way that, like, you know, it's like they jumped too far ahead. Like, usually Black Mirror, and, you know, Black Mirror's made me laugh, Black Mirror's made me cry, Black Mirror's made me very, very angry, and I enjoy all those emotions it generates, but derision is not, like, some of these episodes felt like jumped two or three epochs in technology ahead to where we didn't see any of the resulting society transformations that all the intermediate steps. We just jumped to, like, look at this absurd conclusion.
Hmm.
People are going to download your memories and use them against you in a court of law. Like, as like, what the fuck? When? I mean, I get that we, like, shit on our rights of privacy right now, but how the hell did we get to this world? And that's the first time that, like, some things felt, I guess, genuinely false to me. And not in the way, like, not in, like, just me rebelling against, like, oh, I don't like what this says about current society or where we're heading, but just, like, I don't know. That seems dumb.
Yeah, I guess I never felt bad. The ways in which some of those episodes that I think you're talking about let me down is I think they didn't do anything interesting with the premise they set up or anything beyond just what I initially felt they would do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, here's a premise. We're just going to explore it in kind of a mundane sort of way. Like, I'm not interested in, like, the obvious conclusions on a specific piece of technology. That's never been the thing that Black Mirror has done so well.
Right.
Most of the time, it's either some kind of cautionary tale where they go, oh, you didn't think about this aspect of this technology. which really gets me going, or it's some kind of like comment they're making about our current society.
Right.
And I think those ideas are in some of these episodes that I think we both thought were less than stellar. But for me, it was all about just like do something interesting with the concept you're setting up, as opposed to just telling this fairly straightforward story.
Yeah.
Like episode two very much feels like just a fucking straightforward, like, we're going to put this thing where we can see through your eyes and your brain, and we're just going to tell a story with that, and it's not going to have any twists, and it's just going to be straightforward.
Yeah.
Boring.
All right, so let's get to talk about particulars. The first episode was USS Callister.
Oh, yeah.
Directed by Toby Haynes, written by Charlie Brooker, who wrote all the other episodes, and William Bridges collaborating. It stars Jesse Plemons, who we know as Meth Damon or Fat Damon, depending on whether you remember him from Breaking Bad or Fargo Season 2. Kristen Milioti, I think is how you pronounce her name, which you're going to hear me say that a lot this episode, who I've seen around, but this is the first thing I really sat up and took notice. Jimmy Simpson, who, in addition to being a McPoyle, also had a kind of star turn in Westworld last year. And Michelle Cole, who you would recognize if you have seen the Netflix show Chewing Gum.
Don't forget Jimmy Simpson's role in House of Cards as well. Think.
Oh, right.
Maybe you're forgetting his amazing hacker.
Animated fish on an iPad.
So
I will say, I would open up with this. Like 2 weeks ago, we were finished up today. I think we were waiting to, because, you know, we usually don't go home the nights we go see a bald movie. And, like, you know, I was catching up on some paperwork and some correspondence. And you're like, well, I'm going to go watch television. So you turned on a television and I heard the opening bars of a Star Trek episode, like an old series episode. And I didn't, you know, I've got an encyclopedic knowledge of Star Trek, and I'm like, I don't recognize the premise of this one, like the first 30 seconds. And I said, Jim, are you watching the old series or the animated series? Because I haven't seen or remember all the animated series. He goes, I'm watching episode one of Black Mirror. And I'm like, holy fuck.
It tricked you.
I don't know what better praise you can lobby at something that's being satired than saying I found it indistinguishable from the original product if I was just listening to it. Because Jesse Plemons does a pretty fucking good James T. Kirk.
He does. Yeah, he does a real good one.
So, obviously, spoilers for all of Black Mirror. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're about to spoil the shit out of everything.
Oh, yeah.
So, stop watching if you have not seen it and want to. So the premise of this is, at first I thought it was just, I'm like, this is kind of weird. They're just going to tell a straight up Star Trek. Like, I wonder if they're going to go back and like redo the 70s Star Trek with full knowledge of the actual technology we have in the 21st century. And maybe what will that change? Like what is the deal? Or they're going to look into like how absurd, like the very noble image of Star Trek is with like super high mini skirts and go-go boots, or like what's the hook here? And eventually the hook is revealed that this is Jesse Plemons, who is a very frustrated CTO of a company that he started with his friend, Jimmy Simpson, and he takes out his frustrations in a workplace on this virtual world.
Yeah.
That's populated. Here's the Black Mirror angle. It's entirely populated by virtual clones, would you call them?
Yeah, exact, like, identical simulations of the people he works with.
Which, I don't know how, but I'm persuaded that if you were able to simulate a person so much that the simulation thinks they're that person, then you, for all intents and purposes, are dealing with an actual living human being, something that can experience pain and suffering and...
Yeah, I mean, now that's going to be probably one of the primary things we talk about for this episode.
Right. And the way now it's a little dodgy the way this technology works. Essentially, he gets a DNA sample from you and somehow he has all of you. He doesn't have like an idiot. And I thought that's maybe what it was like when he captures the first woman who were introduced and she puts her in a simulation. I thought that she was going to be like an unformed idiot person that he has to slowly teach.
Right.
But it's not. They have all
comes equipped with all the memories and experiences of the person.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm willing to overlook it for the premise. Cause you know, they've it's I guess, I mean, it's kind of hard to say, hey, we're going to get you in like this cloning box.
Right.
And we're gonna hook your brain up to this computer and map your brain without people knowing.
I like the way that 6 Day did it. Remember that old Arnold Schwarzenegger where they took clone bodies? So that's the one thing. And then to the guise of a vision exam, they flashed something along your optic nerve, and they used it as like a high-speed fiber optic thing into your brain where they could scan within seconds your entire brain.
Huh, okay.
I mean, that's at least some kind of sop. Now, I guess the other thing is like, I think you're supposed to understand that Jesse Plemons has written a very popular virtual reality program.
He has.
So it's entirely possible that he could grab neural scans from anyone that's played the game, and certainly Kristen, whoever her character's name, she would be one that, because she worked for the company.
Well, they make it pretty clear that that's not possible, right? Because of the lollipop stuff and the stuff where he got my DNA off the lip of a cup or whatever.
All right. Well, maybe
so they make it explicit that he has to have their DNA. That's the mechanism here.
Maybe that's how he gets their physical likeness.
Yeah, definitely physical likeness, but along with that comes somehow memory.
All right, so it seems like it's bullshit.
Magic,
seems like it's pseudoscience, but
right.
So this is an examination of essentially what we think, what is a human?
Sure.
Combined with an examination of the toxic forms of fan culture.
Not even fan culture. To me, it was more the toxicity of, or I guess like escaping into a virtual place to deal with things that you should deal with in the real world. That are then expressed in terrible ways in the real world because you never actually deal with them, right?
But isn't that an interesting concept? Because like,
oh yeah, no, it's like totally interesting.
Like I think having a holodeck where you could have like the Reginald Barclay style of having, you know. Because I'm wrestling with what 13-year-old me thought with now what 41-year-old me thinks about this stuff. But like,
right.
It seems like a holodeck where you can simulate things that happen in your own life and try different things. Like if you could like get someone bullies you and you can try out, you can best them in the simulation, or you can try out withering insults. It could be an effective form of like, I guess, therapy or a way to get over some of those traumatic things. But you also have like, is it cool? Are we cool when we have holodecks of millions of people virtually fucking John Hamm and Scarlett Johansson?
Right.
Without their knowledge or consent.
I think that's important. If they're just
simulations of people and you're having sex with them on your personal holodeck, is that okay? If it's not okay, how can we reasonably stop it? And then what if the simulation is actually indistinguishable from the actual person? Like, is it suddenly cool that people are working out their issues on a virtual world that's populated by real people? And then they're like super sane and nice in the real world. What the hell does that even mean?
I think kind of as it's limited to this episode where he's dealing specifically with coworkers whom he should have conversations with, and he's dealing with real world frustrations with those people in a simulated virtual environment. I think that's where it becomes like this bleeding of toxicity from the virtual world to the real world, where as like training wheels, maybe a simulation of somebody would be great, right? Like you're saying, go through an array of scenarios where like, okay, I approach them this way. How do they react? I approach them this way. How do they react?
I mean, like run a simulation of a pitch meeting you're going to have.
Right.
You know?
But then go and have that real fucking pitch meeting. And the problem here in my mind, aside from the idea that these simulations are essentially people in every respect, the problem there is he never goes and deals with those toxic feelings in the real world.
Yeah.
And so he's carrying baggage both directions, right? Like everything that happens in the real world is feeding his simulations and vice versa.
Right.
So he's building up these people into monsters when they disagree with him in the virtual world,
right,
and taking those feelings into the real world.
Right. It's also interesting. I do think there is something about commentary of like fandom, because I've seen with my own eyes on the internet fans of a medium espouse worldviews that the heroes of that medium would utterly reject. Like I've seen racist Star Trek fans.
Right.
I've seen, you know, racist Captain America fans. I've seen all kinds of shit that, like, it shouldn't go. Like, I've seen people watch Rick and Morty and worship Rick Sanchez, which if you've watched Rick and Morty, you should know that's crazy. That's insane. Yeah. Jesse Plemons is doing this knockoff version of the United Federation of Planets, and he, even inside the fantasy, maintains its adherence and ideals, but he's also enslaving these people.
Yeah.
And I also like the kind of twist where, like, I thought there was going to be some really disgusting sexual predation, but he's kept the weird virginal chastity of, like,
fake show, right?
Yeah, because, like, the real Star Trek was sexy for its time.
Yeah.
And provocative for its time, but, like, that kind of weird pre-adolescent chastity of this, like I thought it was just going to be fucking and sucking and all kinds of degrading shit, but it's mostly just dehumanizing shit to get people to play. I don't know. That
I love the moment when Jimmy Simpson whips his pants off.
Right,
he's just got this smooth, like, or just sort of bump.
Yeah, it's like we tried rubbing them together for a couple hours, just nothing. So all they do is when Jesse Plemons not around, they just drink.
Mm-hmm.
They drink desperately to try to medicate their. And I thought they could do, you know, they did a lot with the concept.
They did.
But there's a couple things where he had, I forget who the villain was. Was he just like a vendor that pissed Jesse Plemons off or something?
Yeah. So I don't remember exactly, but he was a coworker, sure.
He's a coworker. Okay. And he was the chief villain, and he's like physically scarred because of all the shit that Jesse Plemons has done, and also because I guess it fits in his persona. There's one point where, like, you know, Jesse Plemons, the captain, had bested this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, and I think they were leading to a dramatic death. And I'm like, huh, this is interesting, because why would you keep these people around eternally? Maybe as a reward for good behavior, and because it's dramatically interesting, you monster, Jesse Plemons, you could kill some of these people off for good.
Uh-huh.
And he doesn't do it. And that serviced the more horrifying aspect of the thing, but I also thought it was the less interesting actual possibility.
Okay.
Because at what point do these people, like, they made a good case for Jesse Plemons Jimmy Simpson, that his character didn't want his son to be involved. Like, you know, that this guy had stolen the lollipop and he was cloning his son and doing awful things to him even that, after how many decades would you eventually say, you know what, I'm out. I can't do this anymore.
Sure.
Which they did play around with Black Museum, which we'll talk about at the end of the show.
Yeah, we will.
Did you have any others those are kind of like my very small quibbles where I think they could have done something more interesting with the show and they didn't. But
I didn't have a lot of problems with this first one. I think the first one was really, really dark and really well constructed.
And because of its conceit, I was on pins and needles, because Black Mirror being the type of show it was, like, there could have been the darkest of endings.
Yeah.
And I was pleasantly surprised, I guess, to see them kind of let the crew win against the captain. Like, they had a very believable way that they internally hacked their way out and got the real life quote unquote Kristen Milioti to break into Jesse Plemons' house and destroy all of the, you know, DNA evidence they've got. But then I'm like,
they don't have a long term plan, though, is the trouble here.
Right.
Because, like, look, this is the guy who created the company.
Right.
This guy is on the day to day monitoring and managing the cloud based system that they have serving up all this content. He could easily find you and torture you again from the cloud.
Because,
he could encapsulate
because the real
you
life Kristen,
and put him back into his computer simulation.
Because the quote-unquote, I won't say real life, I'll say the Kristen Prime and Jimmy Simpson Prime have no defenses against, they don't know that Jesse Plemons is a monster.
Right.
So it would be very easy for them to get that DNA and put him right back and now...
Or even get the patterns of the simulation from the cloud. Like, they've escaped to a cloud which he himself controls.
Maybe that'll be a sequel.
It's a larger subset of... Or I guess it's a larger place for them to explore, but it's still under his influence.
Yeah.
So they don't have a long-term plan... which is problematic for me. It just so happens that the firewall, you know, incapacitates Daly by the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's rendered I guess, a vegetable at the end of this? Like, the whole simulation shuts down? And
I think so. That essentially, like, your mind, his mind was trapped inside. I mean, that seems kind of dumb, but, you know, like, it's the
maybe,
way...
Maybe, I mean,
it's
I don't
the,
know how the interface works.
That's what I'm saying. It's the magic way that this thing works.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't think your whole brain literally goes inside the machine. I would think it would be some kind of link. So, like, how in the world can a firewall erase your actual neurons? I don't know, but it's magic. It's whatever.
Yeah.
I did like the end. They also took a jab at internet culture where, like...
Right.
So, their thing, and they were just committing suicide, which was... would be victory in their, you know, the ending of their... This is kind of like, I have no mouth and I must scream, literally, at one point.
Yeah.
The time that Jesse Plemons tortured Kristen, he just takes away her mouth, nose, and eyes, and she would just endlessly suffocate until he get, you know, because she still needs to breathe, but she can't die.
Right.
And, like, you know, that's do you know what I'm referring to? I have no mouth, but I must scream?
The game?
Well, but it was also based on a classic short story that was written by... Fuck, he would be so outraged that I've forgotten his name. A very famous science fiction author who's got a problematic relationship with Star Trek and a bunch of other stuff. He's very much a curmudgeon, and I can't remember his name.
Okay.
And that amuses me. It's a lot of that kind of like psychological body horror of being the victim of a cruel god.
Yeah.
But they also had that swipe of internet culture where, like, they're pleasantly surprised to survive the ordeal.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're actually in the larger game and they're floating around and they got the starship. They can explore space, which is, like, not a bad way to spend however long this company keeps their servers on. But they find the player and they're like, you know, they're going to treat this like Star Trek. And that player's like, you know... do you know the way? Kind of like he just immediately starts trolling, or, you know, like if he can't use them or abuse them, he's not interested in them.
Right. Yeah, he's playing a game. This is their real fucking life.
Right.
Like, it's kind of fucked up. Did you recognize the voice?
No, who was it?
Aaron Paul.
No shit.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
And he's doing like his full on Jesse too.
That's cool.
It's great.
All right. Yeah. That's funny. Because I'm surprised I didn't, because he also has a really good turn on BoJack Horseman where... Aaron Paul in BoJack Horseman is not doing a voice, but he is performing, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Like, he wasn't doing a funny character voice for Jesse, but he wasn't performing. And it's this subtle distinction is kind of interesting. Huh. That's cool. Do we have... I don't know what more to say about this.
I don't know. I mean, there's still the angle of, like, are these people? Should these be treated as people? You know, like, how far do you go in saying, hey, these simulations are people?
Yeah, because it's like...
How do you afford them the same rights and that kind of stuff as human beings deserve?
Right, because I'm like, you know, I'm playing this game Fortnite, and one of the things you have to do is rescue civilians from zombies, and these civilians, who are not player characters, they're just procedurally generated people, they scream and they run and they take damage and eventually fall to their knees and die.
Mm-hmm.
They're not people.
Right.
But how far into the simulation, where you've got like a realistic simulation of a person that you could torture and trick and deceive or make fall in love with you, like, when does that stop becoming a program and become a form of life?
Also, if you can that easily clone, I guess, human beings in simulated form, how quickly does the value of life degrade?
Yeah.
Like, how easily can you dispose of things?
And
like
it goes
that?
Both
Do you
ways.
Even treat
I see this working on both ways because, like, increasingly there's this, like, I just saw in some Scandinavian country, they outlawed the boiling of live lobsters.
Okay.
And it's an interesting kind of, like, stand-in for this debate because simultaneously in the 21st century, we're redefining what it means to be cruel to, like, animals, and but we're also tolerating what seemingly, in my mind, a lot of inhumanity to, like, our fellow man, like cruelty and making them live in substandard conditions and the way we treat them in prison and stuff like that. So, like, a lobster is not a person.
Right.
Does it feel pain? Scientists, if you ask them a question, are kind of like, it perceives noxious stimuli and tries to withdraw itself from that situation, but so does an amoeba. Does an amoeba amoeba can't possibly feel pain.
Would.
But a person can, and a dog can, and then, like, you go down the line until it's like you're looking at animals that, like, seem to suffer, but are they really suffer? Like it's really an academic and yet real life question that I think, you know, if we're passing laws against banning fucking boiled lobsters, I think we're pretty close in my mind to passing laws banning slaughtering of civilians in video games.
Well, that was going to be my question. Like, would that same law apply to a very well simulated lobster? Like, could you say, well, I've programmed this lobster to feel pain.
Yeah.
I programmed this lobster to recoil from the hot water.
Right.
I've programmed this lobster to act like a lobster.
Right.
And in this game, I can throw it into a pot of boiling water.
Yeah, right. Because the question is...
Is that outlawed?
Because the thing is, like, whether something feels pain, which is essentially just a stimulus, I don't think is... The question is, can a organism perceive suffering and horror? Because if it can, okay. Like, if the lobster is just, like, it's like the T-800, you know, as it's going into, like, in the end of T2, Terminator 2, it's going into the hot molten magma.
Yeah.
It's receiving all kinds of pain signals. There's all kinds of things, like, as it's losing consciousness and dying, there's all kinds of critical warning, this is killing you, get out of this right now.
Yep.
And, but it's clearly not suffering. It's giving the kid a thumbs up, letting him know, hey, I'm cool. Like... I mean, I don't think, you know, lobster obviously is not programmed to let us know that, hey, it's whether you boil me or not, it's cool. Like, I'll if you leave me in a tank, I'll eat my own arm. I'll right. result to can't. Like, I do all kinds of weird shit that you guys would think is utterly unhuman. Look at me. I've got like a million legs underneath this thing. Ah, I'm a fucking nightmare creature. Like, I don't know. So, like, that's a great question because, you know, this thing could be like imagine if you could have a simulated biological human. Mm-hmm. That's like essentially a vegetable, but it responds realistically to drugs and surgeries and all kinds of other treatments. Like, that would be such a boon to medical science.
Sure.
You could stop using great apes as analogs and killing a bunch of pigs and mice and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, what if you got to simulate a mind to test antidepressants?
Yeah, I feel like we're going to have less objections to, like, simulating a physical body as opposed to simulating the brain, because it is all about the brain, like you're saying, right? It's about what you can feel, what you can respond to, how you can express that and experience it.
Yeah.
So when you start simulating those types of things, it becomes problematic.
What if you cloned a human body, you grew it out of a vat, but when you genetically engineered it, it just wouldn't grow a brain?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a lot of people to be... I mean, I admit that's an uncomfortable kind of, like, body horror fiction, but, like, I guess if there was a sign-up process for that, I would sign it up, because that Aaron meat laying on the table getting cut and experimented on is not going to perceive anything.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a soul to lose or anything like that. It's like, but will it cheapen human life? That's the other question.
Yeah. And I think... That's something that they don't quite explore. Like, the bigger questions are not usually explored, even in this show. They're just, like, kind of surface level.
Right.
And even this one is sort of surface level. It's very, very dark, and it goes places in that regard, but it doesn't quite explore, like, the larger questions that I have, I guess. Mm-hmm. Which you can't do everything in an hour.
No, you cannot. Shall we move on?
Yeah.
Second episode is Archangel, directed by Jodie Foster, and written, like they all from here on out, by Charlie Brooker. Mm-hmm. This one is about a mother played by Rosemarie DeWitt, who has played a cottage industry of playing off-kilter, somewhat crazy women, unless she's playing opposite of Anne Hathaway, and then she's the stable one, and Anne Hathaway's a crazy woman.
Okay.
And Brenna Harding, who is playing the daughter, which I've never seen before, but I thought she was pretty good. This is a parable of how involved a parent should be in their life, like what responsibilities a parent has from sheltering their child from making mistakes. And how
the one note I have is overprotective mother.
And how parents can go overboard and underboard. Because the beginning of it is the woman loses her 3-year-old in the neighborhood, and then she has this kid implanted with this chip that allows her to see everything and hear everything. She can monitor her cortical stress levels. And really fucked up, she can enable a content filter, which makes something that the child
essentially
looks at.
The consequences of her actions go away.
Right. Like, she can't perceive blood. She can't see a barking dog that's scary. Like, yeah. It just blurred. And to me, it's like that makes a child, that makes fundamentally a child less safe in the world.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's something that's very interesting. Every once in a while, children are born without pain receptors, mm-hmm. speaking of the lobster thing. And those people are almost always very short-lived because it turns out, like, painful stimulus is critical to keeping our dumb asses alive. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like we would just be a walking... I mean, I'm not sure exactly why it is, but I do know that that's, like because, like, you know, we don't keep us from getting abraded. We don't keep from cutting ourselves. When we have a wound, we don't keep it clean and we don't protect it because it doesn't hurt. And you just end up dying of, like, massive trauma or systemic infection.
Yeah, evolution has only gotten us so far in that regard.
Right. So I think this was an interesting – and it also – this drove me crazy because, like, I had a mother who would have loved to had this thing. Like, yeah. My mom, long before I ever did anything that would have warranted it, was tossing my room for contraband and angrily confronting me with anything she found that was double plus ungood. And this story is about how weird that would make a kid. And I identified very strongly with that.
And the unintended consequences, I guess, of overprotection.
Right.
And I think the filter thing is good to include in that because it kind of shows it sort of demonstrates along the way, like, the well-meaning of it all, I guess. Like, the parent wants to keep the daughter safe and doesn't want her experiencing these really traumatic things.
And you should.
And
you
so
should.
You turn this filter on. But, right. Like, it starts as that, and then it eventually becomes this thing where the filter is its own worst enemy, where it breeds this kind of behavior that is hurting the daughter even more.
Yeah.
You know?
And the fact that, like, you know, you have this child that's born is completely helpless, and if you do everything right, at the end you have a strong adult who's capable of making decisions and living with the consequences of their actions. It's all the middle ground. It's all very tricky. Like, you know, when do you... Yeah. The stuff that I'm grappling right now is with a proto-teenager. Like, when do you let kids watch rated R movies? When is it okay for them to start watching porn? When can they do you
when
stop
they
correcting them for swearing? Well, yeah, when are they going to, like, rip a bong? And when are they going to have sex for the first time? And what kind of experimentation should they be allowed? And I think those are all great questions, and parents have to take them on their own and kind of figure things out. But, like, I guess what this is like, that's usually a two-sided. The child, you know, argues for their independence and acts in ways that they gain trust. And, you know, they also lie, manipulate, and do all the, you know, because that's a way of them getting their independence. But what if there's mm-hmm. a technology where it's a completely one-sided?
It shuts it down, yeah.
I felt that very strongly, that, like, I just, growing up, didn't have the right to make my own decisions. Mm-hmm. There were some areas that, like, no matter... You know, like, even though I was becoming a person with my own thoughts and feelings, like, there's just no way I could ever gainsay my mother. And, you know, and it's like a lot is like I felt kind of traumatized and triggered after watching this episode.
yeah.
But I also thought it was a deeply stupid episode because it's very one note. And
it
I thought it could
that,
have been
yeah.
a lot more nuanced. But it just shows it just refused to do that. And I don't if you made Rosemary DeWitt slightly more reasonable than this is just a standard mother-daughter relationship with a layer of technology on it, and she was slightly more sadistic, it would be fucking Black Museum. So it falls in this uncanny valley of being kind of trite and predictable and infuriating if you grew up with a domineering parent.
Yeah, I feel you on that. I think this was probably my least favorite episode of this series, and not to say it's bad. I think it's saying a lot of, I suppose, important things, but it's nothing that I haven't considered before. You know, okay. It didn't open my eyes to anything.
Right. I say it's slightly below mediocre. It's not bad. I actually think the worst episode. Do you want to talk more about this?
Not in particular, no.
The worst episode for me of this season is Crocodile.
Crocodile. So this is the Memory Machine?
This is the Memory Machine, where this is directed by John Hillcoat and written, of course, by Charlie Brooker, starring Andrea Riseborough. Mm-hmm. And
this seemed entirely pointless.
Kieran Sonia Sauer.
Like, the resolution of this had nothing to do with the actual, like, technology. Like, the guinea pig, right? Okay, so...
Oh, yeah, like...
So I have problems with, the idea that a thing that reads a human brain could read a guinea pig brain.
Yeah. Like, what is a guinea... Like, what would a guinea pig's memory of that thing be?
Right, and how would you trigger it?
Right.
You give it a carrot or whatever it was eating
right.
that day? Like,
right.
And
let it smell its own piss
and
for
you
a
talk
while.
To it? Like, the procedure for getting memories out doesn't seem like it would ever work with a guinea pig. But,
right.
But, granting... You know, that little bit of, I guess, latitude here. I didn't feel like the resolution was surprising, really, in any way.
No.
Like, the baby being blind was kind of, like, dark and fucked up, but it was wasn't important.
It's almost a funny moment, especially when the guinea pig was revealed. Like, it felt
right.
like a joke.
It was completely unimportant. And everything leading up to it, I was thinking, this is a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
This is a bad person that I don't want to succeed.
Right.
I don't want you getting away. I want them to catch you.
Well, that's the other thing is she's a bad person, but like, what was interesting to me is that she tried to do the right thing, and arguably she was
beginning, yeah.
When this dude came back and started all this ruckus, I would have said, yes, go. Like, I wanted to do that on that day, and you forced me, and you took my phone, so I couldn't do anything else but help you, and I'm in the middle of this wasteland, and what if you kill me if I... Like, it's an easy argument to make that she was forced. Now, I mean, I...
In the moment, but later she certainly had latitude to go say, hey, we did this terrible thing.
Right. And then she murders, she keeps on murdering, and keeps on murdering, and then she, like... Here's the other thing is like they make it clear that she doesn't have to cooperate with this matter, but she does anyway.
But I think like she could get a warrant or something for this. I don't know exactly what it was.
Yeah, that's the thing. So what I'm saying is like it felt like society had jumped three levels beyond privacy invasions that I was not aware of. Because I don't know, like. The world's getting pretty fucked up in what you can and cannot use as evidence for people.
Okay.
Like
is it?
You can like a police officer in some instances can grab your phone because he's taking an inventory of your possessions and he's pulled you over for drinking and driving and you're drunk and then he starts scanning through and turns out he's got a conversation where you bought an 8-ball 3 weeks ago from your dealer and now you're getting a drug charge or like... I mean,
or Facebook posts leading to crimes.
On the one hand, it's like if you've got the argument, like, well, if you've got nothing to hide, then what's the worry about? And then you know, like, I always think that's a stupid argument, and anyone that still makes it hasn't thought about it for 5 minutes. But on the other hand,
yeah,
is it are capital crimes like murder and rape and arson are do we want to solve them or not? And if we had a foolproof, perfect way of doing it, why is that a bad thing?
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm saying, like this woman is a criminal and she should be caught, and she is caught through what I would perceive as a gross invasion of a person's privacy.
Sure, I almost kind of wish it went the other way, and it was like she hadn't murdered anybody, but her memories were getting confused with her imagination by this machine, and she was convicted.
Or
because
what if her
of
boyfriend
it?
And her had a consensual, like it looked like she was choking him because that's how they like to get down and
right.
And that
and she got like the death penalty for that or something,
right?
You know?
Because this guy also just went missing that same night and like something like that. Because that's the argument for why this is bad.
Yes,
because. Evidence is evidence, but people's interpretations and people act and do weird shit all the time. And also, what we consider a crime changes all the time. 1950s, it was a crime to have consensual sex with another man if you're a man.
Sure.
Nowadays, it's just life. Yeah. Like, what the fuck? Like that's I guess that's the reason we have privacy.
I guess I'm watching Black Mirror wrong.
Are you?
I'm watching Black Mirror wrong.
I might be watching it wrong, too.
Right. I'm watching it looking for the thing that is supposed to put me off of everything they're showing me, right? Like, the thing that says you want none of this technology.
Yeah.
Where, as a matter of fact, they're actually doing stuff that, in some cases, says this technology is good and useful. Like, in perhaps this episode and perhaps even the next episode.
Or, like, Minority Report was great for that, too. If you had a system that could detect... people on the threshold of committing murder.
Uh-huh.
They haven't actually done it yet, but you're going to get them, like, theoretically 30 seconds before they take the knife that they're holding and plunge it in someone's heart. Is that bad? Or is that like...
Minority Report muddies the waters by saying, hey, you can tamper with this
system. Yeah, yeah, right.
And manipulate it. But yeah, if you can't, sure. Yeah, I don't think that's bad.
Yeah, but this technology, it's like, you know, you'd have to have some strong controls on it. Like, if you're going in to investigate this self-driving car running over somebody, which I bet Elon Musk loves that shit. I also can't wait to see what happens in real life when the first automated car runs over and kills somebody.
Yeah.
It's going to be glorious. It's gonna be hilarious to watch that. Like, it's gonna be a tragedy, but also whoever gets killed first, your life is also gonna be this cosmic joke.
That's true.
That will have far-reaching impacts on how we proceed as a race, and that's all ridiculous. The fact that I don't even know where I was going. I got caught up in my self-driving car. If you're there to investigate that, if you find some heinous shit in someone's memory that doesn't have anything to do with that other investigation. It should be a non-issue, right? It's like again, a police, they come, they have a warrant to search something, and they find evidence of some other crime. I'm not sure legally what if that's like, hey, we thought you were a child molester, and you're not. Mm-hmm. And if I find any evidence of that, we found 2 ounces of premium hydroponic marijuana. So you're going to jail for that. Like, is that how the legal system works? I'm honestly not sure. But if it's not, which I don't think it should be, because like that's this cop's taking a wild ass, like they could get a warrant for any kind of wild ass guess and find something illegal someone's doing in their home, like they're stealing cable,
right?
You know, I felt like
there's a strong argument in the other direction, which is you should be punished for the things you do that are bad.
Sure, just like you know, client or
you did them
patient
today
confidentiality
or 7 years ago
goes out the window if the doctor or psychiatrist or therapist thinks you are in imminent danger to yourself or others.
Right,
like hey, I can't take my wife. I've got a gun. And I've got it loaded, and every night I come home and think of a reason why I shouldn't blow her fucking brains out. You're going to get the cops coming to your house because that's scary shit. I don't know. Like I said, it's crazy because I felt like halfway through this episode, I'm like, this is fucking stupid. This is dumb. How in the world is she going to disappear all these people? Like, it's increasingly desperate and sad.
It is, yeah.
Like, she killed this guy. Okay, fine. Now she killed this other guy. All right. Well, he's the guy that did it originally. Now she's killing this insurance adjuster who's just busting her ass and got this young family. And, oh, Jesus Christ, she's going back to kill her husband. And baby? Oh, my. Like, this person transformed into a monster in the course of an hour. And what did I learn, you know?
Yeah, And that's why I say maybe this episode is trying to say it's good tech, right? Because that person was caught.
Right.
That person was
they got justice
brought to
for
justice
the murder
for their
of that
crimes.
Young family, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe it's a positive thing here as portrayed in this episode.
Because they also showed the cost of an unsolved crime. Like that guy, what eventually ate at that guy's guts is finding that this woman who, you know, they went to this drug-fueled rave, ran over someone on the way home, and...
This woman
did not remarry. She kept this constant vigil, always expected her husband. Like, she's living in hell.
Yeah.
She's living in hell so that they can avoid the consequences of their actions.
Right.
And that's not right.
No, it's not.
But going and fishing around people's brains by insurance adjusters to uncover crimes.
That doesn't seem right either.
Doesn't seem right either. And, like, I don't know, maybe that's it. But the thing is also the episode I felt like should have stopped at a couple of these twists.
Okay.
Like the fucking guinea pig at the end. Like, that's where, like, I was already kind of starting to break on this stuff, and then I just can't fucking take it. I can't fucking take it. You want to take a break real quick to talk about today's sponsor of the Bald Move TV podcast, RX Bar, and you can go to rxbar.com/baldmove and enter the promo code baldmove at checkout to get 25% off your first order. Now, RX Bar specializes in making high quality, no BS protein bars. I think they mean bullshit.
That is not listed as an ingredient, certainly.
It is. In fact, it says no BS.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
So I think S could mean sugar because there's no added sugar.
That's right.
Or preservatives. In fact, the labels are very. Their labels remind me of those, T-shirts were all the rage where they had like John and Ringo and George and Paul.
The other famous one.
I'm looking at the blueberry one. It's 3 egg whites, 6 almonds, 4 cashews, 2 dates. No, that's the ingredient list.
Yeah.
And it gives you 4 grams of protein. Now, if you never had protein bars, I'm not going to say these things taste like chocolate candy bars. But I will say that these are the best protein bars I've ever tasted.
I was going to say, I've had a lot of protein bars, and these are easily the best.
The fact that they don't have any artificial ingredients and stuff, like, that's pretty cool that they taste as well. But, like, to me, it's the bottom line is I don't feel like I need to drink a gallon of water after I have these because they're unbelievably moist.
Yeah, a lot of protein bars use, like, whey or rice proteins. You're actually getting proteins from egg whites. So
supposedly the easiest for your body to digest.
Yeah.
And they're moist and they are delicious. And I feel like a lot of other protein bars I eat, I'm like, oh, Jesus, I have to drink all the water because these things are dry. It's like dehydrated peanut butter. It's stuck to the roof of my mouth and I'm not choking it down without 5 gallons of water.
Right.
These are delicious.
Yeah. And they come in a lot of different flavors. So
here's my bone to pick with RX Bar. I'm allergic to cashews, y'all. I can only eat your peanut and chocolate peanut bar. Look what Jim gets. Jim gets blueberry. Jim gets mixed berry. Jim gets coconut chocolate. Jim doesn't even like coconut. I love coconut.
Yeah, Jim's girlfriend gets coconut.
Jim gets chocolate sea salt, and they all have four cashews.
Hey, there are flavors that you can definitely participate in. There's chocolate peanut butter,
chocolate
which is
peanut
really
butter
good.
And peanut butter.
Yeah.
And they're so good, I want to... I need an Aeron RX bar that is... They take the cashews out and they put in, I don't know, almonds or peanuts or anything.
Yeah.
Because they're so good, I want to try these other flavors. I'm craving them, but I can't have them because
I'm
allergic.
Well, I mean, there are 11 different flavors to try, so...
But that's not their fault.
No.
I was just born with an allergy to cashews.
Yeah.
So if you don't... If you can't eat cashews, there's no reason for you not to go to rxbar.com/baldmove and try these delicious protein bars out and get 25% off your first order. rxbar.com/baldmove.
Well, maybe we should talk about the next one. 404, Hang the DJ.
Hang the DJ, directed by Tim Van Patten, starring Georgina Campbell, which I really liked. I've not seen her in anything before, and also Joe Cole, who I did not. And I didn't really see, like, so this is an episode about a future, well, it purports to be an episode about a future where people have this app that is essentially the matchmaker. Mm-hmm. It puts them in random combinations of relationships, measures their happiness, and eventually arrives at a decision that 99.2% of the time works every time.
99.8%
of the time. 99.8% of the time works every time. And they live forever, or they live forever and ever, happy ever after. But, like, you can meet someone at the bar. There's a lot of questions I have about the society. But you meet someone at the bar, and you look at your app, and it says your relationship will last for 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I'm really hitting it off with this person. What do I do? And then I'm with the person for a year that I hate. Like, and every time you ask the app, it says everything happens for a reason. I really like the premise of this episode, but I have a lot of questions.
I had a million questions until the end of it, and now I have zero.
Okay.
Because it's not a real world. It's not a real place. It's all happening in a simulation inside of a computer, which is giving you the score that you see on fucking Tinder or OkCupid or whatever the hell dating app you're on. Which to me is easily... Of all the Black Mirror episodes I've ever seen, the most positive one. Because it says, look how useful of a thing this app is doing for you.
Yeah, like people
shit
on online dating,
right.
But it's far less crazy than what we did
throughout
all of human history.
Like,
arranged marriages, going for drunken hookups at bars, dating people that you work with, madness.
Friends of friends who may or may not be cool.
Right, exactly. Blind dates, are you kidding me?
You can get a fairly accurate representation of someone in a digital format here that's boiled down into a number, 99.8 in this case, that tells you how likely they are to be good for you.
Yeah. I mean, when I was using OkCupid, I met my wife, and we were 92% compatible. And we've been together we've known each other for 7 years, we've been together for 5, and we've been married 1, and we're fantastically happy, and everything's awesome.
Yeah.
That's way better than I think the results are of just, like, randomly trying to figure out, like, whose ethos and you know, likes and dislikes match up. Like some scientific method up in this bitch.
right,
ain't bad at all. But that's the thing, the 99. So I think the 99 point you're supposed to understand is they ran a simulation between these two people.
Yeah.
And like they ran it 1,000 times and 998 of them ended up getting married in this.
Yeah, broke out of the confines of the wall, like followed their passion, right?
Right. But that's like seems like an unnecessarily complex simulation.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's there more for like the audience to tell us, hey, these are the things you would have to experience.
Yeah.
If it weren't for this app.
I wish it was a real world, and that was the final test before they allow you to get your permanent match, is that you were willing to do this, right, like fucking midnight run or Logan's run, or you know, you're willing to like completely break, like you're willing to be like the Truman from the Truman Show. You're gonna escape the dome. You're that sure you're gonna be a fugitive from society. That's how sure you want to be with this person. And then it ends up being a simulation, and like, what a crazy, weird, detailed simulation of this is. And also, as, you know, coming out the tail end of like the USS Callister, are all those people real? Did the
yeah,
thousand couples
question.
Get annihilated in an instant because these two people are meeting at a bar and want to see if they're going to be happy fucking each other for the rest of their lives? Like,
do they have their DNA? That's my question.
Right.
No, I thought it was cool because it's both like this weird feel of a dystopian kind of future where like you said, this app kind of controls who you're going to be with and kind of learns and gets to know you and then says, this is a perfect match. But then it's also, it turns out to be like a real world grounding at the very end, where a lot of the times, like the Black Mirror episodes will stay in some far flung future with a crazy piece of tech. Right. This in a really cool way for me grounded it in our current reality in a piece of technology. Like it used this weird, like future thing with the little chip they have or whatever
to
kind of tell me something about the real world in a very concrete way, which I thought was awesome.
You're right, because like me and Cecily, when we were watching this, we're like, what the fuck do these people do for jobs? Do they actually right. have other houses, or they just live in these love nests? Are there like whole communities of young people that they can't get out until they've been matched up, and they just sit there at the park and they boat and they have dinners and they go to wedding ceremonies and that's it until you get out? Like, you have your self-driving car drive you to your one-night stand. Like, what? How the fuck? But then it's like, oh, I guess it's a simulation, so why would you simulate the boring shit?
Sure.
But the boring shit is a big... So I guess I kept on pushing back. Like, the boring shit's because the real-life version of the woman that we like, you know, she's got, like, a nose piercing and half her head shaved, and she's, like, a very different look and ethos of what I saw the simulated version of her. And I don't know what... I didn't have an impression of the dude.
That's true.
Like... how is that a valid simulation? You're running the fucking Leave It to Beaver version of this person.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what they're trying to say. I don't know.
I don't know about that part. I hadn't considered it.
But it's like a low res simulation. It only simulates her sexual and like downtime compatibility.
Yeah.
Like how they see work life balance. Nah, fuck that. Kids, meh. I did like the thing where when he unilaterally, like they, like, you know, like one of the things is we both have this Palm Pilot thing that you clip to your arm, and that's like your advisor, and it tells you about the dating stuff and it gives you dating advice. And, and one of the things is you can choose to look at how long your relationship is going to last, but you have to both opt into that.
Yeah.
And the, Joel Cole, he at one point unilaterally, cause things he had his one night stand with this woman. Then he had a miserable year long relationship with someone. While she went through a variety of sexual flings, just banging. They get thrown back together, and they're like, you know what? This time, let's buck the trend. Let's not look at how long this relationship's going to last. And it's going so well for him that he cracks and he can't help. And it says like 7 years, and he's kind of delighted. Like that's like what would you do if you found out that like you're going to be with your girlfriend 7 more years?
I mean that's a good amount of time. It's not the like perfect amount of time.
What is the perfect amount of time?
Well, I mean, especially in that moment, like you want to be with him forever, right?
Is she going
to
die? Are we going to get tired of each other? Am I going to die?
Well, I mean, more importantly, every moment that you're in love, you want to be with that person forever.
Right. And then
there is no amount of time that it could say like, 32 years. Well, yeah. Shit, I mean, that's still not long enough.
And I like the other side of that, like when she got with this one guy for 3 months or whatever, uh-huh. that he just had this thing where every time he took a drink, he went,
yeah.
And that was like eating crackers in bed for her. She just couldn't fucking stand it. And like,
yeah.
she just sullenly, she has to stay with this guy for 3 more months. Like this, like, oh my God, I am so ready to be out, but I can't.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it showed both sides of that. Like the fact that when you're happy, you can't imagine life without this person. And when that shit flips, yeah. I think everybody who's older than 20 years old have probably seen both sides of that.
Mm-hmm.
When it flips, like you fucking can't wait to get out of the relationship. So that was all super interesting. It's like the stuff that they tangentially brought up
mm-hmm.
was more interesting than the main thing of the episode, I guess.
Yeah, I guess like that number of when it comes back 5 years or whatever, it's like that becomes your whole focus. And
right.
I think that was the important thing that made the relationship so great in the first place is
right.
they didn't look at it, and so they never thought about it, right?
Like, right.
they were enjoying the moment. Whereas if you're thinking ahead to like, oh, how is this all going to pan out?
Yeah.
Is this person going to love me forever? Like, what happens when they don't? Like,
right.
that for him, like, the reason the time kept getting shorter and shorter is because that was his focus, right?
I also think it's the broken trust. Like, the system
that
thought
too.
You
yeah.
were compatible because you had similar ideas of dishonesty, and then when you broke the trust. Like, it's mm-hmm. weird. It's almost like a way to look at the examine cheating without any of the like, well, you stuck your dick in somebody else kind of like drama
yeah.
that goes along with it. Because ultimately
right.
the problem with cheating is that it's a breach of trust.
Sure.
And, you know, trust is required for any kind of intimate relationship. Like, mm-hmm. you know, Jim and I's relationship requires trust. You know, if all family relationships require that. And obviously, it's not necessarily infidelity, because there's been tons of relationships that are open or on one side or the other. I don't know, like I said, the sum of the episode is much more than, the other way, the parts of the episode were much more than its sum, I thought.
Okay. For me, the sum of it was, holy shit, Black Mirror just did a positive technology episode. At the very end, I was confused by it. I was very fucking confused because I was looking
right.
for the dark twist, and
yeah.
it never came. And in fact, the opposite happened.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what did that just say to me?
Yeah, almost.
I almost said, there's no way Black Mirror could do something positive
yeah.
on technology.
Yeah, it's surprisingly.
And I eventually came around to it. But...
And also that, like, maybe this is the story of what these simulations are perceiving, because that's why the world is kind of like very rounded and sanded, because there are limits to the simulation, and they're kind of confused. And there's also this thing about they couldn't remember the first time they met. There's something like they couldn't remember details
yeah.
of the past. And like I thought there was a lot of tells
yeah.
that if you watch the episode again, you could go through and like, oh, well, it's obvious. Here's where this is the part of the simulation that's,
yeah,
you know, doing this one thing. But it's weird because it's one sided, because like I felt like Joel got to experience seeing Georgina with some other dude, but she didn't get, like, so that's an interesting experience of like, okay, we'll test that and see how he feels about that, and that might feed into your simulation about how much he loves her. But then where was the analog for, I guess she saw they were both with someone, but
that's right, yeah,
but it seemed clear that, yeah, I don't know, that's what I'm saying, like maybe I'd have to see this episode a few more times, which I'm probably not gonna do.
Yeah, and I like at the end how it's not this sure thing, right? They don't
yeah.
they don't play it as if like they should obviously immediately just hook up and they'll be happy forever. They kind of play it almost a little cautious, right? Like they get this 99.8% match rating and they kind of look at each other across the room, but it's not like this immediate love connection. It's
yeah.
it's more like, should we try this kind of thing? Like,
yeah,
because it's not a guarantee. You don't look at the number on the dating app and say, boom, that's it.
Well,
match for sure.
Yeah, and the fact that it's 99.8% I thought was really funny, too, because imagine you're at 0.2%.
Right. Yeah.
That, like, and also, like, you know, if you're in the throes of the early stages of a hormonal relationship, the temptation to think, like, it's almost ultra-romantic. We're the 0.2% that the system doesn't get. We're fucking Rome. We're the star-crossed fucking simulated lovers, you know? Like,
right.
Like, it's almost... I think I would find it more like better for society if it was like 87% effective, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Yeah.
Or like 75%. It's better than just fucking around, But there's problems. You can't simulate people. I thought it was delicious, the 99.8%. Because that means for a vast majority of the time, you're going to be fine. But, like, imagine meeting a married couple that's in the 0.2%. Everyone around you is marital bliss, and you hate each other. And there's no recourse for you. No one's going to believe you.
Forever, yeah.
Yeah. Are we ready to move on to Metalhead?
Yeah.
Metalhead, directed by David Slade. There's a couple striking episodes. Like, as much as I did not like Crocodile, all that shit filmed in Iceland was gorgeous.
Yeah.
Was absolutely gorgeous. And this is a fairly conventional sci-fi horror film filmed in stark black and white. It stars Maxine Peake, essentially, like, it's her and a robotic dog for almost the entire episode. I thought this was awesome because it came, I was in no way expecting, like, I kept, you know, like, the first 10 minutes of the, I'm like, what the hell is this about? And then it became clear what it's going to be about. Then I had so many questions about the world, and every time I found out more about the world that poor Maxine lives in, it got more and more confusing. Do you want to, like, set up for the listeners, like what is the pitch on this episode?
I mean, it seems to be the pitch is there is some kind of post-apocalypse setting where humans are in the minority and hunted by these dogs, is what they call them. But they're little metal robots with four legs that have an array of weapons.
Which, by the way,
and
those
tracking
are
capabilities.
What's cool about these robots is, like, that's on the cutting edge of locomotion. Like, there are actually laboratories making these robots right now, and they move and look almost exactly like these little quadrupedal things do.
Yeah. Like, this and that's the whole premise. Like, that's it.
But see, at first, the first half of the episode, until she got to the what was obviously the rich man's gated complex, I thought this was going to be a story of what happens with the 1% when they attain, like, all wealth and automation, and they don't need anybody to, and, like, you've got all these, like, you, me, factory workers, doctors, lawyers, everybody that doesn't already have $1 billion. You need medicine for your child, well, we're going to guard the warehouse the medicine's kept for the rich people with these robotic dogs, and you'll be killed like scum, because that's kind of... It's kind of how we treat poor people right now. Like, if you don't have a place, you don't have a place to live, you can't take care of yourself, you can't keep yourself on the streets, we'll at best herd you up into camps, at worst we'll treat you like criminals and run you out of town or lock you up. And there's a segment of our population that's happy with those types of people just dying. So I thought it was going to be that, and then when they got to the rich man's house and he's committed, like, maybe that's how it started and it got away from him. But he had committed, you know, obviously suicide.
Yeah.
And then at the end, I guess, I guess I'm still kind of confused about, I want to know more about the world and how it happened. Like, I felt like this is Terminator 7, and I didn't see Terminator 1 through 6. I didn't know what happened to Sarah Connor. I didn't know about D-Day. I didn't know about all those things.
Yeah, and I think that's why this was maybe my third least favorite.
Oh, I really liked it.
Of this series. But it just didn't have anything to say. Like, it was a horror movie about robots. Yeah, no, it was well made, and it was tense, but it didn't have anything to say, which is why I watched Black Mirror. So, the only thing that it could have possibly had to say is humanity is fucked if this ever happens because of our weaknesses, which are emotions, right? Because at the end, we see what she was actually out there trying to get for presumably this kid who is dying of some disease or something.
Right.
It's not.
She's dying.
It's not medication.
Dying of robots.
Right. It's not medication. It's not like the thing that's going to ease his or her pain in those last few days is a teddy bear.
Right. A particular teddy bear of a type that they already owned, and maybe it got lost because of the nomadic existence. Like, there's a whole backstory behind they're looking for a particular serial model, and they've tracked it down. And
yeah.
But I thought the actual tech of the dogs was fascinating. Like, what a character it was. And, like, the moment, the little moments of triumph, like where she pulled the tracking fragment out of her leg and then put it in a water bottle and threw it in a river, and then her idea of, like, trapping this, I guess it's a solar powered dog, into this cycle of, like, shutdown, and it's got her treed,
Right.
And she throws things at it to every, like, she has a countdown of when it, like, enters power down mode, and she wakes it back up to make it go through its whole cycle so it's dead, mm-hmm. and she can effect an escape. And, like, the way... I mean, it's also awesome, like, the, you know, how much monumental Herculean effort she did when it put into killing this one thing. And then, you know, at the end, there's just hundreds of them.
Yeah, and I mean, even when she kills it, it sticks her with more of the trackers.
Right. Yeah,
in a place where she can't remove it from.
Yeah. Like, when it picked up that fucking knife and started, and I'm like, yeah. Jesus.
Turned it into its appendage, yeah.
This is horrifying.
And when it, like, went at the wall... it goes at her leg.
Yeah, because she covered its optical sensors with paint, and then she played music, so it's just wildly stabbing at speakers and things, and it's like, you know, methodically destroying every speaker in this car. That's playing this music. Like it's fucking horrifying, man.
Mm-hmm.
It was like it's been a while since I've been that afraid of a robot. Like maybe going back to T-1000 because it had that kind of like it's going to never stop until it gets you.
Yeah.
And how, like, I was kind of disappointed, honestly, to see it go post-apocalyptic, because I thought the better hook would be, you know, like if this was reported on the news as another desperate junkie trying to get its fix, you know, and like, you know, like law and order was, and you don't see this like desperate struggle, and it's just, you know.
Yeah, that would have been a more interesting twist to me than the teddy bear, honestly.
Yeah, but... It is a tight 47-minute slasher pick starring a robot dog, and yep. It was it is pretty good for a bleak, because it was like 5 degrees below zero late at night when I saw this, and it was just what I wanted. Now let's get to another, I thought, wildly successful episode, Black Museums, directed by Colm McCarthy. And it stars Douglas Hodge, which I'd only seen playing, I think the guy's name is Inspector Busk from Penny Dreadful, and Letitia Wright, who I don't think I've ever seen in anything before. And this is the closest I've felt to watching like a Tales from the Dark Side. This is Black Mirror's version of Tales from the Dark Side.
Yeah, this was a really good one. This was like all the reasons I come to Black Mirror.
Yeah. So it almost seemed like an anthology. And I was wondering up until like the final minutes of the show, what is it that's going to tie all of these things together?
Mm-hmm.
And they did it, and it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, they did it through a lot of the technologies that were used throughout this series.
Right.
Like you get the brain scan stuff, and interface stuff from USS Callister at the beginning, and like the DNA scanners, you can see all of these like trophy pieces in the museum.
Right.
From previous episodes. And I like that a lot. And yeah, I mean the premise of it is it starts off, you think there is a girl driving her solar-powered Cadillac through the desert. Just on her way somewhere, and she stumbles across this Black Museum, which is a cataloging of all of the historical pieces of technology that have gone horribly wrong.
It's like, the Black Mirror Museum.
Right. And so you think it's just her touring this museum, and it turns out there's this criminal there who had been convinced to allow himself to be recorded when he was electrocuted. Mm-hmm. In the electric chair before he was killed, and have his consciousness moved to some kind of pod for storage.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that this girl who has stopped at the Black Museum is actually his daughter, and that this criminal has had his copy of himself being tortured there for years and years by the proprietor of the museum, just being electrocuted over and over again and being commoditized, turn into trinkets for the visitors to
buy. Each one of those also a fully formed version of his consciousness that's stuck in the moment of being electrocuted forever.
Right. And so she, turns out, is here to avenge her father and to set him free.
Yeah. And there's a lot of overlapping technologies that they slowly into, because this guy, the hook is this man who's the proprietor of the Black Museum was a like an R&D man at a pharmaceutical company that had pioneered like three different types of technologies. The first was the ability to strap on a helmet and feel. No, it's an implant that the guy got that then they could strap on a helmet and he could feel what was happening to a person's body. And he was a doctor,
right.
So like he could instantly feel exactly what his patient was feeling, and he cataloged like what a burst appendix feels like and what
a heart attack
feels like, and all these different things. And he got like to be a pain junkie. And I forget how that ended up.
He ended up inflicting pain on himself, but he couldn't sustain that, so he went and killed some bums.
But then, he got into, some kind of pain coma. That was where we last left him. And he just did horrific things, too. And there's a lot of, truly horrifying things. Like, this guy, man's a doctor, and he gets addicted to pain. And, you know, the place he works at starts realizing how bad this is and how compromised he is. Because he's, letting patients hang on the pain of death and getting high on it.
And then one of his patients died on the bed while he was hooked up to them, and that became the ultimate feeling for him.
So
he was chasing it.
He gets furloughed, and he's sitting in his apartment, and he's a doctor, so he knows exactly what he can do to his own body to extract maximum pain and suffering but not kill him. And it's some fucking gross shit.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like you said, he kills a bum in pretty horrific fashion. He does all this terrible shit. The second vignette is he talks about a man who's married to a woman, and they have a daughter, and she dies in childbirth, right?
She goes into a coma.
And they have this technology where they cannot restore her life, but they can take her body, download it, and plant it inside another human.
His unused brain space.
His unused brain space, which is – this is starting to be it's one thing to do – this border on pseudoscience, but whatever. And the idea of what it would be like to have a hitchhiker in your consciousness that, It's one thing to agree to be married to somebody, but now they're with you 24/7. You can't ever move on because your wife is now in your head, and you're going to try to move on with another woman, and what is she going to think about that? And the horrifying implications of what that would be. So,
and then they take it even one more horrifying step farther, which is the guy eventually gets fed up with it, and they have a mechanism to transfer her to another brain. This time an artificial one inside of a teddy bear.
That has very limited ability to express itself. It can say, Teddy wants a hug and Teddy loves you.
Right.
And what happens when the child gets bored of that toy? And that's like fucking Metallica's One, essentially. It's not as grisly as a soldier that's lost his limbs and his eyes and his, but it's still I have no mouth and I must scream what the fuck would you do as an intelligent person? And then the fact that you realize as he's telling the story that this woman is still alive and she's still in this teddy bear and she's in this glass fucking case like Annabelle from the Conjuring movies, holy shit, that's terrible.
Oh, and it doesn't even end there, right? The final reveal is pretty amazing,
right? So she takes all of these the man's daughter takes all of these technologies and she's drugged this guy, which is something they also do really smart, that they she's surreptitiously hacked his building to disable the air conditioner so it's hot.
Yep.
And he bums a drink of her water, which she's poisoned, and he gets paralyzed, and then she essentially uses a combination of all these technologies to load his consciousness into the simulated consciousness of her father and then electrocute him. Because there's the thing is, I guess you can only electrocute this simulation for up to 15 seconds before it loses its neural cohesion.
Yeah.
So she executes this guy inside her father's consciousness at full blast, 15 seconds, and then saves that, his eternal torment, on her keychain.
Mm-hmm.
And then it reveals that her mom, who committed suicide a while back, is hitchhiking in her consciousness.
Yeah.
Which then you start thinking, was this a happy ending as far as revenge fantasy goes or not? Because what is that going to be like?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, fun and games when you're riding shotgun to your daughter pursuing her course of vengeance, but now what?
Yeah, no, now you're that couple who their mother was in a coma.
right.
and transferred in, and you get tired of living with somebody else
sure.
in your head.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not all candy and gumdrops
and,
in the end.
And
like
eternal executions, yeah. yeah. There's some darkness on the margins of but this shit was incredibly dark, almost like an over the top, like goofy way at points.
Yeah.
And how much they like went for broke on showing this doctor disfiguring himself and the torment this man was facing through being you know, and also like the weird relationship the original mom had with the stepmom. Where, like, there's a scene where the new stepmom grabs the teddy bear and pins it to the wall and is like, listen, bitch.
Right.
You're going to do, this is the way it's going to be, and if not, and, like, it's like.
Teddy bear can't feel anything.
It's black comedy.
Sure.
And for the black, but the, also the fact that you just never know in Black Mirror whether things are going to be bad, whether things are going to be good, whether they're going to be in between, how yeah. fucked up it's going to get. Like, I always find watching a Black Mirror to be particularly tense. Because all the cinematic conventions I usually cling to, like, well, the good guys are going to win. Everything's going to yeah. be okay. Like, no, no. And it's not, they don't even do it the opposite. Like they mix it up to where you really never know.
That's the thing I think this season taught me is to not expect a certain thing going into Black Mirror episodes.
And that's tough
because I did previously.
Because when are you in the mood to watch Black Mirror?
Usually when I'm looking for something dark and dystopian.
but then you might get an uplifting thing.
I know.
That's like, that's
yeah.
the thing. It's like my least favorite types of chocolate are the fucking sampler packs.
Oh, yeah. The chocolate boxes with all the different kinds.
Because I'm going to bite some. I'm going to bite into something that looks delicious and chocolatey and it's going to taste like ass.
This is worse because usually they give you the key on the lid, right? To where you can say, okay, well, this is chocolate and caramel. This is just a crapshoot.
This might be comedy. It might be incredibly dark. It might be depressing and make you want to cry. It might make you angry, very angry in a visceral way that lasts for you for days. And like,
yeah,
that's my problem with it is like if they're going to keep dropping this like the week after Christmas, I'm going to have to start saying I'm going to get to this around Valentine's Day.
Uh-huh.
Because that's when I just don't like, you know, like middle of February, like the tail end of winter. I'm not giving a fuck. I give too many fucks during the month of December to be bummed out by the oppressive dogs and mothers hijacking people's brains and eternal torments of the spotless mind. Like that's my one criticism. Like I'm never like in the mood for Black Mirror because I don't know what Black Mirror is going to
be. Well, there is no mood for Black Mirror, right? It's so many different moods.
Right.
And you never know what you're going to get, like you said. So I need.
Yeah,
I think the show has a problem in that regard, but not one that will keep me from watching it.
Each episode needs an emoji.
Yeah.
It needs like a smiley face, an angry face, a sad face, a you know, like you know, it needs, they need at least an emoji so you know what you're going in.
Yeah.
I need the sampler pack key. I need to know whether this is going to be a raspberry tart or it's got coconut in it or, you know, like what is the creamy thing I'm going to be biting into?
Maybe Bald Move can provide that for people.
Yeah.
Maybe we can watch it and we can assign smiley faces.
You know what?
Or...
That would be a good idea for going forward is like our first 5 minutes of a Black Mirror podcast is here's the six episodes. Mm-hmm. Number one's funny. Number two is a thinker. Number three is horrific.
Yep.
Yeah. I think, that might be good.
If we remember, we'll cover season 5 like that. but I really did enjoy this final episode. I thought it was great. And it combined all of the.
There's also a lot of
feelings.
There's also a lot of tension because it's called the Black Museum.
Yeah,
and it stars a black woman that comes up to this disheveled establishment in the middle of the American desert, run by this cagey white dude. And I'm like, oh, and she has an English accent.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, dear God, don't tell me this is some dystopian American and they're going to literally lure her into a black museum where she's going to be an exhibit.
Yeah. I was worried about that.
I thought
as
it was
well.
Going to go like total dystopian, racial kind of like, and you know, that I guess that would have been an interesting thing to explore too. But
it could
like,
have been, sure.
This was
it was more challenging than I wanted at that moment.
Right.
And I'm glad it went the direction it went.
Right. I'm glad her father just was a wrongfully. Imprisoned man who has
had
to
nothing
die
to do with his skin
eternal.
Color, right?
Well, and that's the other thing that was kind of funny is like, did you notice that story was like on in the background news, like that horrific murder that he got accused of was a news segment that the doctor was watching?
Huh.
And then there was something else about...
No, I didn't.
Yeah, there was something else about, like, in the backgrounds that they had all these, this world that was tightly wound together. And that's another thing that, like, that Cecily kept pointing out is, like, the song that was, like, the trigger song in Crocodile was the same one that Sybil from Downton Abbey sang in, and that show...
Oh.
In season one, and that show that she was, the reality show, was a reality show that was on in the background on one of the TV. They, like, Black Mirror does a lot of self-referential shit, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't know how you reconcile all those different worlds together.
I don't think you can.
But
it's probably just a funny... It's
Easter
kinda,
eggs.
Yeah, it's just Easter egg stuff. And it's easier to do that than clear original, you know, new
sure.
IP.
Yeah.
Like, instead of getting American Idol and try to cut Simon Cowell a check, just make essentially dystopian American Idol.
Yep.
Yeah, but another, I guess, I was reading David Chin's take on this, because he came back, he came out of retirement to write a blog entry where he was rating the things. And one thing he said, he goes, I'm actually sort of amazed that four seasons into this experiment that Black Mirror retains the idea to tell as many big, original, thought-provoking ideas as they do, because it's really easy to make six episodes. It starts getting hard at 12, 18. When you're at 24 hours of thought provoking crazy shit that happens as a result of just the intersection of it's not the Twilight Zone where you could go supernatural, you could go sci-fi, you could go religious. You
right.
really have this one lane that you got to stay in. And I agree with him. I'm amazed that Charlie Brooker is able to keep this thing as fresh and as awesome as it is.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to next season and going back to season three because I haven't seen that yet.
So yeah, that's our Black Mirror coverage for 2017. I don't know when we'll be back. I know we've got a bunch of things planned. We have an idea for like a roundup episode for some things we missed in 2017 we want to talk about. I know we want to get back to Star Trek Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
There are like a couple of those things that are kind of lurking in the near future, so we'll look out for them. And also the Baldies award show, our fourth annual, longest running internet podcasting award show by two middle-aged dudes from the Midwest. Entering its fourth year, it'll be out next week. And if you don't know what the Baldies is, it's award show where we crown like best drama and comedy and actor and all this other stuff, and we have fun with it. And it's like an hour show, but we also release, like, unlike other less accountable award shows, we release 12 hours of content of us deliberating.
So you know that it was in no way scientific.
It's no, but we at least we clearly show our biases, and we show why we valued one thing over the other, and you can go into as exhaustive a detail as you want. And there'll be a lot of content coming out next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.